Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as a blind JFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassination, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you, and everybody at AFR I know loves you, man.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. The alternative. Chuck Ocelli.
24th day of February 2017, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the Ocelli Effect, just like the bumper says, broadcast live from the facilities of AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I, however, am broadcasting from somewhere within the confines of Frankie's playroom, since the entire house is his playroom. And we are definitely going to have a conversation of interest tonight. I believe so. And I'm very sure that my guest will agree that it is something of interest that we're going to discuss. I have no script as per usual. And recently encountered this gentleman directly on the Cold Reality Radio Show, which you guys have heard Shali on this show before. He's the host over there. And interesting guy in and of himself. Shali won't be with us tonight. He was there on Sunday, and we did that over at UCY.TV. But Clint Richardson has joined me tonight, and he has been requested by more than one of my listeners to be on this show. So I'm actually really happy to have him with me. And he wasn't quite feeling so well on Sunday. I don't know how you're doing now. But you could tell the listeners how you're doing, Clint.
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I had there was an influenza going around, the strain of influenza going around, and it seems like it caught just about everybody on my block, my neighbors' kids, which I play with, and then it spread and spread to other people, and one guy ended up in the hospital, an older guy. So it was a bad little experience, and I still have the cough, which I'll try to mute out if I have the cough, but not fun.
No, definitely not. Look, you know, the flu, just like many other things, seems to be communicable, including, quite honestly, stupidity. But that's something you're not afflicted with, and I can attest to that for sure, because I've had a conversation with you most recently where you appeared to be extremely sharp. So sick or no sick, you were doing just fine. Here I am with my odd sense of humor, and it is interesting to have you on this show, I've got to say, because you're one of these guys who talks about a very real side of the equation that I think a lot of other people don't understand. Now, let's see, how could we introduce to the listeners who Clint Richardson is, because aside from the people that requested you on the show, there's got to be a decent number that are sitting there going, okay, who is this guy? What does he do? Where is he from? I mean, you do a bunch of things. I don't know how to put you into a quick little 30-second soundbite. So why don't you just do it and explain who you are and what it is you know and what it is that, well, I'm very sure we're going to cover similar topics to what we did on Shali's show. So give them an idea. How about that?
Well, I mean, I don't know exactly what to tell people other than I have no credentials to speak of. So, you know, if that's what you're looking for, you might want to visit somewhere else. What I did do is I, like so many people, you know, I went to college. I went to a sound engineering school. I got a degree. And I became a sound designer and worked on movies and games and videos, so I'm familiar with the Hollywood propaganda. I'm glad to be away from it. Kind of had a crisis of conscience while I was in Hollywood, which was 2000, up until about 2008. And quit my job because I was working on my favorite thing to work on was video games. And I was the lead designer on a game called Resident Evil, the fifth game, and it was just, you know, pure demonic blood and guts, and, you know, we made it sound real good. And that was my job. And to a kid or to a young adult who grows up in the technological age with video games and movies and entertainment, that's a pretty cool job. It was kind of my dream job, if you will, to be in that business. I never wanted to be an actor or a movie star or anything like that, but I was always fascinated by the structural, the post-production and the pre-production and all the production that goes into making these complete idiots look good on screen, right? Sound good, especially on screen. And so, you know, you find out that most of the magic in Hollywood is just that. It's just illusion, delusion. So we'd get the movies or whatever, commercials, and then, you know, you get them before all the post-production happens, all the imaging and all the cleanup happens, and you know, it's crap. I mean, it looks like a home movie until you add all the effects and everything. And then you have the actors come back into the studio and re-say their lines, so there's no production noise in the background, and that's why it sounds so crisp and sharp and why everything sounds good, is because these guys in the background, these slaves that work 14-hour days like I was, are back there making it all happen. So complete, you know, it's just illusion. And after a while, even though it was one of the coolest jobs I could think of, I just decided I couldn't be a part of that. And I became basically joined We Are Change LA, but way back when, 2005 or so, and just became essentially a full-time activist. I haven't worked an official job since then. I've been researching, writing, making movies, doing radio, and now finally have been quit all that to write a book or a series of books, which of course we'll talk about. But that's it. I don't have anything to offer. I was in New York for 9/11, so I watched it from my roof. Unfortunately, I only got up there after the so-called planes hit. So I saw them fall, which was one of the strangest things in my life. Really kicked me into gear to make me start, you know, looking at things a little differently. It seems like I was in the wrong places at the right time to get a swift kick in the butt to wake the hell up from this strange illusion we're all suffering from, the legal lie that I call it, you know.
Well, right, and this is a great place to start because, look, your bona fides as far as having, you know, say, pieces of paper with your name on it from alleged institutions that definitely institutionalize people that participate in them is really irrelevant. The fact is that you directly participated in the creation of images, the creation of the illusion, so you understand full well what goes into creating an illusion. And from this standpoint, I think to reverse engineer what we see as the grand illusion, the grand delusion, if you will, of the legal society and how they have created a psychological prison for the majority of the masses. Well, I think you're in an excellent position to explain that actually. You know, just given your background, working on Resident Evil and all that. I mean, that sounds kind of cool and everything, but, and it is. It's actually, there's an art form to that. And, you know, if you were doing that kind of work, obviously you weren't a slouch at it. And I can appreciate the illusion of these kinds of things because I've been on, you know, television production sets, and of course I was a musician, so I understand there's a big difference between what it is we can do in a studio with just sound alone. I'm a big fan of cartoons even, so, you know, the voice acting and the sound, which is interspliced into the illusionary, you know, bright colored pictures, is something that has always fascinated me, and I do still partake in it as far as entertainment goes. I don't really watch TV, but I do watch cartoons, although I am still definitely on strike when it comes to Family Guy. Just side note, screw you, Seth MacFarlane. Anyway, back to the whole the whole of the story, though, and the real headline here. Coming from that perspective, you can understand how an illusion is constructed directly, the visual and the audio. But it goes way beyond that when we're looking at the illusion that a lot of people are under in a general sense when it comes to, well, what? The legal fiction that is created and all of that. I mean, where do you even begin to start? deconstructing that madness, which most people are born into and understand from day one. This is my identity. This is my paperwork. This is what I need. And even with the real ID and all this other stuff now, literally without the correct numerical sequence, you can't work, trade, or do anything. It's really a bizarre overlapping matrix, isn't it?
Well, that's a good word. Matrix is one of those, it's one of my favorite words because matrix means womb, like an artificial womb. And it also means mother. So it's a very interesting word when you actually think about it. It was used in such productions as Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, I think is what it's called, where they talk about the artificial womb, which is the legal system that as soon as you pop out of your natural birth, you're burst into a legal system, a fiction, and you're given all these protections and benefits and everything else. That's a good place to start is actually the Matrix, the movie, because people don't like to hear this, but The Matrix, as a movie, was actually a really, really crappy production because its sources are so brilliant. Its source of the idea and all the things that are used in it, the concepts, the words, they're all stolen. They're all plagiarized from a book called Simulacrum and Simulation, which is a book by Baudrillard. He's dead now, but he was a French university teacher, and he wrote some incredible stuff. And his book Simulacrum and Simulation is a simulacrum, by the way, is defined as a copy without an original. And that twists your mind for a while. Like, you can read the first page of his book and be completely confused because you don't understand what that means. Copy without an original. Copy without an original.
Well, yeah, that concept alone is a little disturbing because how do you copy something unless there is an original to copy it from, right?
Well,
I mean, that's the immediate logical question, yeah?
It's interesting because if you actually look at the Bible is a simulacrum. There is no original Bible. So that gets really interesting in and of itself. So here's in an interview with what's his name, Reeves, Keanu Reeves. He said, "I had to read Baudrillard. I had to read Out of Control, which is the New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World by Kevin Kelly, who is the guy who does Wired magazine,
right.
Another book called Evolutionary Psychology." Those were the three books that they wanted me to read before I could even open the script. Okay, that's what he said in an interview.
And so that's from Keanu Reeves, the guy who ends up playing Neo, actually said that this is what they wanted him to do for background research for the role, which is odd because to me the character that he winds up representing is an archetype, which is part of the system, which is acceptable, but meanwhile he has to understand what system he's part of, right, in order to get into character, I guess?
Yeah, it's interesting because, I you know, like so many people out there, I kind of idolized and sort of worshipped the movie because it was the first of its kind to really hit home that there was something going on, some simulation that we don't understand, and eventually figure out that's the legal matrix, that's the legal system. What Baudrillard wrote in his Simulacrum and Simulation is some of the most brilliant and hard to read stuff you'll ever come across. But when you get it, when you understand what he's saying, that everything we do now is a simulation, we worship images instead of the real thing. We're on the computer. We now have transferred or created a world inside of the computer that we actually pay for digital real estate. We have the same system in the legal realm has transferred into the digital realm, and all the same phrases are actually now in the digital realm. So a really easy way to understand the legal realm is to look what's happening in the digital realm. You're buying artificial space that doesn't actually exist anywhere except in some computer somewhere, some storage device, and you're paying a lot of money, and you can will that to your heirs. And you, I mean, there's this whole system being built up that's exactly like the legal system. The great thing about it is that you can actually kind of see in a digital perspective, oh yeah, there's my land. It's now being presented to me in the picture form. I can see it. I can walk on it with my little avatar, my little person, my little character. It's the same thing in the legal realm. It's all complete fiction. None of it actually exists. The paper, the title, the words, they're all lies, but we confirm them, we ratify them, we believe in them, therefore they become our reality, they become our simulation, right?
So well, see, really, this is what I explain all the time as the layers of the surrogate reality. And, you know, the internet is now one of the, well, more recent developments in this, but really this has been going on for a very long time where there is a representation of what is real as opposed to what is actually real. And I think this is part of the disconnect that that seems to drive the really misguided sentimentality among people in general. The fact is that they are so disconnected not only from the world around them but from each other that they now can accept even the most ludicrously completely without foundation, without substance ideas as reality. What do you think?
Well, that's the whole point, is to take people out of nature, out of reality, away from their source, which is, you know, where they come from, what, you know, and you call that, it's interesting when you actually figure out what the word God means, you find out it actually just means basically nature, as it's written in the Bible and is intended. You find out that God is actually a verb, and we'll talk about that because I think it's very important to understand the Bible and the law of nature, which is the Bible. You have to understand the word God. Nobody seems to care to actually, you know, find the definition of these words. And it turns out the word God is just a generic term. It means absolutely nothing. And there's like 20 different, Latin or Greek or Hebrew words that the word God was used as a translation. So, you know, king is a god, a president is a god, a mayor is a god, a judge or a magistrate is a god. And, of course, the king would the king is God. We get our rights through the king as Englishmen. And then, of course, America came along. But before that, all the people here, we got our natural rights through God, and God was the king. And that's easy to verify. You can find that all over. When we went to court, we prayed. We didn't plead. We prayed, and we still use the word pray in court. We prayed to the judge because the judge is our God. We're following that law, so the creator of the law or the administrator of the law is a God. And so God is this generic term. And because the word God is used so many times and for so many different words, archons, theos, Elohim, Jehovah, king, queen, you know, just on and on and on, right. we get the impression from the King's translation that God is the one that's doing all these horrible things. God is calling armies to fight. God is doing all these things. When in fact, God is actually the word Jehovah, the highest, you know, notion of God is just nature itself, existence. What is real? What is true? What is not a creation of man, basically? So it's really fascinating to understand that. And until you understand that, that the law of nature is not some term that refers to the plants and the animals. And it's actually the term nature. You know, when I say that the nature of a vase, for instance, is glass, right? It's the law of source. It's the law of what your nature is. And so if your nature is clouded with fiction, then your law becomes the law of fiction, the law of persons, the law of nations, all these things that are not real, all these things that are a simulation of the real. They appear to be real, but they're not, because you've lost the law of nature and you've embraced the legal fiction. And so everything that is artificial becomes your nature and therefore your law. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the reality of this notion of the Matrix, which again is a plagiarization, a very bad plagiarization of Jean Baudrillard's simulacrum and simulation. And just to be clear, and to verify that, you can go in the movie, you can see it used as a prop, simulacrum and simulation. It's a hollowed out book that he keeps his money and his discs in. Mm-hmm. And most people don't notice that. And that it's also turned to the page called, the chapter called On Nihilism. Right. So it's a really interesting thing, because I had to know, man, I was so worshiping that movie, worshiping this sort of false god, if you will, that I'm like, what is it about this movie that so drives me to want to know what's behind it? Because I could tell it was an incomplete type of, you know, it wasn't telling me anything. The Matrix movie doesn't give me anything. It baits me, it tantalizes me, but it never actually teaches me anything, unlike the book, which teaches you basically everything. So it's a really horrible, horrible translation and plagiarization. A very, if you will, I mean, I would even call it adversarial to what the intention of the original work by Baudrillard actually says. So I highly recommend Simulacra and Simulation. If you want to know what The Matrix is all about, those two books are it. I mean, that is what the movie is plagiarized from. And they don't really give it credit except for that little,
what they call an prop. Easter egg, yeah.
Yeah. But I found that Easter egg, and that is what led me to understand the whole thing. It helped me so much in my journey.
Well, it's interesting here because now two words that you did utter during that explanation that come together are completely misused. But here we go. Here's a term where it's been hijacked, in my estimation, for other purposes. But the concept of natural law. Okay, there is such a thing as natural law. All right. I'm not saying that I understand the whole of the law. I am simply saying that I know it exists. Okay. And it does sound, quite honestly, I know that you might not find this reasonable, but I know that my listeners are going to understand why I'm bringing this up. And I want you to knock on this all you want. This is a very pagan concept. To my understanding, what people would describe as pagan, and I describe myself as a pagan, by the way. Okay? So have at it, you know what I mean?
Well, it's actually quite the opposite, because to really understand it, we can certainly go into it. I think it's very valuable, highly, highly valuable for people to understand this, the concept of what Jehovah is. Paganism is polytheism, essentially. It's the worshiping of multiple gods. In other words, not monotheism, which is the worshiping of a single or oneness that is God. So we go back, and keep in mind, you know, every Bible dictionary, the concordances, the lexicons, all the things, this is what I'm looking at. This is not my opinion. I don't want anybody out there to think that this is my opinion. What I want to do is give you the tools so that you understand that when you read the Bible, you have to look up every single word. You can't read the Bible in English. English is a language that's designed to keep you dumb. It's a language called Dog Latin, and it's a language specifically of illiteracy. It is made purposefully to keep you illiterate because the legal language is completely opposite of the spoken language, the common language, right?
Right. So, well, allow me to clarify one thing, though. I realize that, you know, you're saying that, you know, paganism is this concept of multiple gods, but what is misunderstood by a lot of people in the way that I have internalized it and have always understood it is that there is a hierarchy of, let's just say, beings that are on that level of the gods, okay? But in truth, there is only one source, and these things are all expressions of the one source.
But believe it or not, that is Christianity, except the church, the organized church and state has come along and turned the Bible into a religion, and the religion has nothing to do with the Bible. You gotta always separate the Bible, the scriptures, which is an ancient knowledge that is a copy of a copy of a copy. There's nothing original necessarily about the Bible, In other words, it's a collection of ancient knowledge. Obviously, the knowledge in the Bible had to exist before the Bible was written, right? That's a self-evident truth. So it's not like the Bible just came along and was spoken into existence. No, it's a collection of ancient parables, knowledge, stories, allegory, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we can't get caught up that it is anything but that. There's a certain litmus test when it comes to the Bible, and there's a curse, I think, on the Bible. And the curse on the Bible is that whatever you expect to get out of the Bible is what you're going to find. If you want to justify war, or if you want to justify peace, you're going to find it. If you want to justify anything that you are doing, you will be able to find in the Bible some justification for it. Because in order to explain what is right, you also have to explain what is wrong. So you're gonna gravitate towards the explanation of what is wrong, and the idea is that the new law, the law of you know, the example that Christ is in the allegory, is supposed to be the example of how to follow the new law. The new law fulfills the old law. The old law is just the law of men, and the spiritual law fills in all the holes so that you can't bypass. You know, that's all. When it comes to paganism itself, the Roman term that they created for, which was Christian, and I want you to understand that Christian is not a word that's used in the Bible except as an insult. Okay, Christian is used three times. Christ never says, come be a Christian. Christ never says, call me God. Christ never says anything, because Christ is an allegory for the law. How, it's the story of how to follow the law. It's nothing else, right? It's not a history. It's a parabolic journey into what will happen if you stop following the law. The Bible is the story of exactly what we're going through today. We have chimeras and DNA alterations and genetic, you know, everything that's happening today is because we're not following the law of nature. We're invading the very structure of nature. So let's go back to the Roman legal title of Christian is actually a pagan title, right? So, you know, and everybody I think is familiar with the concept that every time a new people were integrated, that they integrated part of their pagan religion into, all right? Same thing with Christianity. Christianity was integrated into the Roman pagan system, and people were allowed to be called Christians as a legal title. Well, the Bible says take no titles, never call yourself anything that you actually are, because the title then interferes with your actions. There is no Christians in America. There's no such thing as a Christian. You're either acting under the law or you're not. Period. End of story. There's no title. And no cross you can wear, no symbol. You're either acting under the law, which means that you're following Christ's example, or you're not. There's no title. There's no flatter. The Bible's very clear. Don't respect persons or flattering titles. What is a person? A person is an individual, a corporation, association. All right. That's the Republican Democratic Party. That's the government. That's the churches that are incorporated. Don't respect any of those things. See, that's the beautiful thing is by the time you get done reading the Bible, you realize, hell, the Bible's against the church and the state. Every religion it's against. Every religion. Religion is phony. Religion, it says, don't trust any other doctrine. Well, every religion you come across has its own doctrine.
Right.
And the reason it says that, it's because what is in the Bible, once you uncover it, once you figure out the language structure, once you go back to the original languages and actually figure out what the heck these words actually mean, you find this thing called self-evident truth or self-existence. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to the definition of Jehovah. Now, when the Bible was written, you know, like I said, there's no original, but I can't point you to an original Bible, but I can point you to the Greek. I can point you to the Hebrew, the Chaldean, the, you know, all these different ones. And what you find is that everywhere where King James says the word God,
right,
you would actually find the correct terminology that refers to the specific type of God that was being referenced. So if it was the supreme being of all existence, the oneness of all the universe, everything that exists as one whole being, that's Jehovah. If it's talking about the Elohim, which is the plural that you see in the middle, in the Genesis chapter, Genesis makes no sense. And the reason it makes no sense is because that is the old law. It is actually the Babylonian creation story. And you know that because in the Old Testament, they're still worshiping those Babylonian gods. So if you look at I can't remember the name of it. It's called the Babylonian creation story. It's the story of Tiamat and Marduk and all these different gods. Right. Baal worship. That is the law that the gods they were following in Babylon before Babylon fell. And that's how you know, you read the creation story of Genesis, you're like, well, that's an exact copy, down to the taking of the blood or the rib to make man as a slave race, basically. It's amazing when you discover, okay, so there's nothing of God, if you will, there's nothing self-evident about Genesis. And again, you have to read this thing, in order to read the Bible, you have to become a child. You have to become innocent again. You have to forget everything you've ever heard about it. You have to forget every negative or positive thing about it. Just get rid of all your beliefs and start over. Start fresh. And when you do that, when you lose your ego, in other words, all of a sudden this thing is the most beautiful spiritual thing you'll ever read, but you have to be able to approach it without any preconceived notions. And we all think we're so smart. I thought I was so smart. I thought I knew the Bible without even reading it, right? Like a movie critic that critiques a movie without it and says, don't see this movie, yet I never even saw it, right? So the word God or the word Jehovah is the most important concept you can understand because it's not a name. It's not an entity. It's not a man. It's not anything that the church in its art represents, right? The word Jehovah is a verb. It means all that is in existence. It means being. It means everything that is real, everything that is truth, right? Not the truth that comes from man. Nothing of man is truth. That's the trick. Everything that is of nature, that is self-existent, that's why they call it the God of existence. Mm-hmm. Everything that is self-evident, meaning it's not a legal creation, it's not an invention of man, it's not a creation of man, that is the concept of the supreme being. See, we hear the word supreme being, we think that's a noun. We think that's referring to some guy in the clouds. No, supreme being it's a verb. It's the supremacy of all being.
Sounds to me right? Like specifically it's an adverb, really. Right? Because it describes something, a state of, as opposed to an action.
Well, the important part about it is that it is the permanence of existence. It doesn't matter what man does. Whatever man does is always temporary, right? All these dams we've built, everything we've built, all our cities, they're going to go, they're going to end up just like every other city in history. They're going to be under the dirt. Or underwater, or under, because the permanence of existence does not change, and the change that it does go through is part of that existence. And so we have these words like creation, for instance. They say God, you know, Jehovah is the creator. Well, the church wants to separate creation from the creator, so they want you to externalize God instead of internalizing and saying, look, I'm part of creation, right? The whole part of what is the natural law is to realize that you're part of that supreme being. You're part of that oneness. You're part of nature. You're not something that is outside of it. You are literally part of Jehovah. You're part of self-existence. The legal system is designed, and the religious system, keep in mind that the Pope is the creator of the civil law, right? It used to be that religion was government, there was no separation, then they realized that they could separate the two forms of law and commit all kinds of crimes in the legal system, by giving themselves license to do so, right?
Right, so that's what a license is.
Yeah, so the church, the Pope is actually the creator, and I've got the documentation for that. I'm not just speaking out of my ass. The Pope creates the civil law in order to divide the functionalities of his empire, right? So he's now got the secular law and the ecclesiastical law, or the canons. So that's where the civil law comes from. And again, when you're talking about the Catholic Church, Catholic means universal. So anybody that calls themselves a Christian is actually calling themselves a Roman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The Christian title is a Roman title. It's never been anything else. They call it they call different churches a denomination. Well, nomen means name.
Right.
So you're just a Roman under a different name. Well, I'm a Methodist. That doesn't matter. You're still calling yourself a Christian. And that means you're calling yourself basically a pagan, which in the true sense of the word, to be honest, the concept of paganism, according to the system that they've built, actually makes you a goyim. It makes you a heathen. It makes you someone that cannot govern themselves. That's the true meaning of paganism to the people who have created this system. So if you self, again, remember, paganism, you either are or are not a quote, whatever it is that you claim to be. You're either, you know, if you're following the legal law, well, I'm sorry, you're not an anarchist, you're not a pagan, you're not any of these flattering titles, you're not a Christian, you're nothing. You're a goyim who has fallen into the legal trap of national citizenships, which is called nativity, which is actually a very bad word. Nativity means you're a villain, you're conquered, you're a slave, essentially. So you're a prisoner of war, essentially, if you're a national citizen. Mm-hmm. And so the notion of paganism does refer to them. I'm not saying it has to, you know, you can make it mean whatever you want, but we're more interested in what they, you know, when I talk to people, I say, look, I'm going to talk to you, and I'm going to sound very harsh because I'm going to talk to you like a judge would talk to you. I'm going to talk to you as someone who's familiar with the law and who can tell you you're full of shit because you don't understand this opposite day system, this legal system. You're coming at me from the heart. You're coming at me from honesty and integrity and honor. But there is none of that in the legal system. It's built to entrap you, to enslave you. So you have to come at this from the perspective of those who wish to control you. And those who wish to control you wish to keep you from the knowledge that is in the Bible. You gotta ask yourself, why is the Bible in the courtroom? Why is it that we're called a Christian nation? Why is it that the Bible is the foundation of the common law?
Mm.
You gotta ask yourself that. And why is it then that you are so smart that you can do without the Bible? You can just ignore the Bible, which is literally the foundational principles of law. You can just ignore that thing, put it away, say, I don't need it, I don't need that. My God is mammon, my God is the state. I'm in the legal system, that's the law, right? Well, no. See, that's the problem, is that the law is the Bible. The legalization of everything that's against the Bible is the legal system. So you're either following what's called the law of God or the law of nature, or you're following in the legal system, which is the gods, which are magistrates, presidents, kings, queens, the Pope. Those are the false gods. And so whichever law you are following, it doesn't matter what you believe, whichever law you're following is the god that you worship. So if you're following the legal law, then you worship the good old United States flag and its president. If you're following the natural law, then you're part of, I mean, literally, you're protecting and preserving and loving and whatever words you want to use, you're part of nature. Literally, you're being what you were born to be. You're innocent. You have no legal titles, no legal fictions. You don't have patents. You don't have property. Those are all fictional things. And so, That that in a nutshell, to understand that the intention of the Bible and the intention of the king to hide that word from us, that notion of what God truly is, and that if you are under that highest authority, that highest supreme being, the state can't touch you. But as soon as you take upon yourself the person, the identity, the fiction, the property, and keep in mind, Clint Richardson is property of government. It's not my person. It's their vessel that I am renting out, and therefore I must follow their law. And so they don't want you to know about the Bible. I mean, you ever ask yourself, if the Bible is everywhere, it's in every hotel room, it's the most sold, popular book out there, and yet I don't know anybody that actually knows what that book says, because you cannot read it in dog Latin. You cannot read it in English. You must read it as it was intended. The English language was literally created to guide you down the wrong path, the legal path of the king. And that's in a nutshell where we're standing right now, because we have ignored and been taught to despise the very thing that the powers that be actually tell you is the foundation of law. And I can read the definitions out of legal dictionaries that tell you, yes, the Bible is the law. If you don't follow it and you go into contract, then you've just contracted the legal disease, dis-ease. You're no longer following that natural law of God. You're following the legal law, the artificial law, the satanic adversarial law of the gods. You see, that's how it works. But how do you possibly explain that to people when people like Seth MacFarlane exist? Right? Because, I mean, obviously that show is designed to take you away from any kind of spirituality.
Right, right. Well, and look, I mean, I have my major problem was with the whole vaccine thing. I can find it amusing when people dismiss the notions of spirituality and the connection of self with consciousness, which has absolutely nothing to do with titles, the majority of the words. You know, let me explain. The reason why I use the word pagan is because there is no sufficient way to explain my particular disposition to anyone. I value the law, which is preserved in the Bible as well, right? And that sounds like, well, wait a minute, he said he was pagan. Because it is absolutely truthful. It doesn't mean that it's in a historical document that gives you the blow-by-blow of a particular event. I'm not stating that. I'm stating that it is a legitimate document which does explain a great deal if one knows how to read it. Now, I took a few different turns at it in English and discovered that even reading it in Latin gives you a completely different perspective. Again, not exactly the right way to go about it, but it did begin to reveal to me that that there is a great deal of undeniable truth in it. I even hate the term Bible, to be honest with you, because that's a generic term for a book. You know, and
well, so you have to ask yourself, though, how can you possibly hate a word, or how can you possibly hate an inanimate object? I mean, that takes a lot of power, don't you think, to make you hate something that is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, is just an inanimate object sitting there?
Well, more accurately, I should say that it gives me an adverse reaction when words are utilized to mislead people. And I do my best not to, but it seems as though I am confounded by the language that I first learned to speak. It is filled with all sorts of contradictions. It's a horrific language, and really a bunch of composite plagiarism too, you know.
But honestly, it's actually not. It's so hard to explain, but like I said, if you go through every single word And you understand that the words used in the Bible are very, it's almost similar to the legal language. You gotta remember that, that the Bible is purely allegory. It's purely a fictional, metaphoric tale that you should not be taking literally anything in the Bible. Okay, the literalist will never get anything out of the Bible. Even the words of Christ, he's like, man, I'm only going to speak to you in parables, and a parable in the mouth of fools, you know, it's worthless. If you understand that everything in the Bible is metaphoric, everything is more accurately parabolic, or everything is spoken in parables. Right. These are stories that are designed to teach a moral lesson, or teach the moral or scriptural or natural law, right?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
But right. So when you discover that, for instance, I mean, there's all kinds of examples I can give you. Circumcision, right? When I say the word circumcision, what's the first thing you think of?
Well, that would be the the cutting of the foreskin and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, but what? Why? Because that's not how it's defined in the Bible.
No, it's not. That's the practice that has become known as circumcision.
Right, and that's because you're speaking English. You're speaking dog Latin, a slang, guttural language, as Mark Twain put it. Guttural, just absolutely mongrel language. The word circumcision means that you must separate yourself. The word foreskin does not refer to the skin of the penis. Because it's translated as foreskin, and because they've driven you to always think sexually or in sport or in some way, never poetically, never metaphorically, because that would be wrong. I mean, you know, we're taught as men to despise poetry, and yet you got Manly P. Hall and so many other people who says, look, poetry or verse is the language of the gods. If you can't speak in poetry, if you can't speak in metaphor, you're screwed. You're going to be controlled like never before. And everything in the Bible is metaphor. It's all figurative. So you can't take anything literally. You have to be able to understand what's being said in the metaphor. The foreskin is literally defined as the skin that is the figurative skin that is around your heart and over your eyes so that you cannot see.
Well, the skin, right? That is in front or over top of, right?
It's not skin. It's a fiction. It's a way of using something real to explain something that cannot be explained. What is it that is over our eyes? What is this matrix that we cannot figure out because it's all around us and yet it doesn't even exist except in some computer bank, right? The legal system, it's all around us, yet it only exists in dictionaries. It's words. It's nothing else, right? So right. What is it? What is that figurative skin that is over our eyes and over our hearts that we cannot bring into us the spirituality that is the God or nature or the natural law, etc. Spiritual. That's what it's referring to. And you take that example and you apply it to all the different all the things that confound, because you're taking it literally. You're not looking at it. The Bible is in verses because it's poetry.
Right.
It's not meant to be taken literally. And so the literalists will have a very tough time ever understanding. But if you can look at it as poetry and you try to see what the hell is it trying to tell me, and you define the words as they were intended, then all of a sudden you realize it's not that this thing is beautiful, but the king put it, he hired his wordsmiths to create the English language, and as it is in modern times, your Sir Francis Bacon and all those criminals, and right. Shakespeare, right? And then you write the book in this English language, and you never tell anybody that, oh, by the way, the higher language, the king's language, is actually opposite. We actually go back to the Latin. So when you go into court, you're speaking the king's language. You're speaking the legal language, but you don't realize it because your intention is literalism. Your intention is to speak what is real. You refer to the land. You really mean the land, but there's no land in fiction. there's nothing exists in the legal fiction. So when you say something, you think that you're actually talking about your home, that building with the wood and the plaster and everything. When you're talking about a mortgage or which is a dead pledge or right, you think you're talking about the real thing, but to them, the judge and to the attorneys, it's all fiction. It's the opposite of the real. So you're in there, just like when you're reading the Bible, you take it literally, you get nothing out of it, or you might be misled, which is exactly what they want you to do. But, and the same thing in court. You're speaking the Kingsley, the higher language. Higher only means like, to them, only means like poetic or figurative, right? It doesn't mean higher that it is actually higher. It just means we've been tricked into speaking the low mongrel dog Latin language and never told that when we appear and we're in the legal system, we're speaking a language that's completely opposite. Right. To that. So, yeah, it's, then you consider, if you consider that and you apply that to all the words we use on a regular basis, man, we say, I'm driving my car, for instance. Well, a car doesn't exist and driving is a commercial term. So you've literally just given them what you think is your property by saying you're driving it commercially under their fiction, under their name, their title, their person, their status. Right. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, even stating that it's yours means that you've attached it to your, legal fiction, right? So, I mean, the whole thing is fraught with all of these misleading uses of the language in order to imply consent to a great many things.
Well, and what amazes me about that is that, when I'm reading the Bible, and trust me, man, I hated the Bible. I hated religion. I hated everything because I equated the two together up until the point where I started studying the legal law. And every time I tried to solve the problem of the legal law, which is it's always contract, right? The devil can't do anything to you unless you contract and fall under his word magic, right? So, and a devil means attorney, by the way. In Scotland, the word devil master and devil actually refers to attorneys. I mean, it's officially, deviling is actually a legal term. That devil is the attorney. See, what amazes me about this, again, is that the legal language or the legal concept, the opposite notion, the trap, that is, has been around before the Bible was ever written. It's been around since the Code of Hammurabi.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about a system of language, of dualism, of something natural and its mirror image, which is completely unnatural. We're talking about a system of languages that are opposite to each other, and they have been around since the dawn of time. The problem is, we're not taught that that's the case. We're not taught that everything you see in the legal dictionaries and language, the legalese language, is specifically the opposite of the natural law. It's specifically the fictional representation of something real, a simulacra or simulation. And the only thing that I kept coming back to was the Bible, because the Bible is the law. The Bible is the foundation of the law. And if you know anything about construction, if you know anything about science, then you know that the maxim of law for all of these things is that without a proper foundation, the substructure will fail. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, this is the case with all of these conventions, let's call them. Without the proper foundation, you cannot operate even within the system itself. And this is the reality. We're almost out of time in the first hour, Clint, believe it or not. And it sounds probably to some people like we're having a biblical discussion, but I don't want you guys to think of it that way.
No.
What is happening here? Yeah.
The Bible is the law. You have to understand that is what it's recognized by the courts. It's not a religion. It's the law. And if you don't realize that, then you're never going to understand that the principles of law, what a judge considers before anything, come right from the Bible. They're even quoted from the Bible, right? You say things like the truth will set you free, and you don't realize that comes straight out of the Bible, right? All these different organizations and things, they're all copying from the Bible, but they never give it credit because they don't want to be thought of as some religious nut. I'm telling you, stay the hell away from religion. Stay the hell away from the priest class. Stay the hell away from the government, the law. Read the Bible because it is the law, and they recognize it as such. That is the only thing that will make you immune from their law is if you're following the principles of law which come from the Bible. And I can't stress that enough. This is not a religious talk. Screw religion. My book is so anti-Pope and anti-religion that it's hurtful.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. Religion is just something you do on a regular basis, like tying your shoes. Stay tuned. Clint Richardson is with me on The Ocelli Effect. We'll be right back.
To the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do. But obviously, they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bring you light to important information nobody else does.
Or they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests?
Well, that's no fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Stand up and fight for what you believe. If we don't do something, we're all to blame. Break down the evil, corruption, and greed. It's all the same game with different names.
Stand up and fight for what you believe. If we don't do something, we're all to blame. Break down the evil, corruption, and greed. It's all the same game with different names.
We die for freedom.
Indeed, I believe it is true that all problems you witness on this earth, you actually have the solution in hand, because you will be able to solve all problems. You know, provided by the earth, in fact, I do believe that everything that ails us is provided. All of the cures, all of the things in order to take care of the problems are already there. It's just a matter of picking them up and using them. This is the Ocelli Effect, and the second hour has begun here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We do welcome you, no matter how you came to the show, by your fondle slab of choice, your applicable application. And we're having a rather fascinating discussion, in my opinion, with Clint Richardson, who, as we did state earlier, Clint Richardson, not really his property, but the property of the state and all of that. And we were discussing a great deal of what is biblical, what is law, what is legal. And it does get kind of confusing when we consider the language we're using. So
it does. And, you know, this is why I sort of stepped away from everything. When I realized the importance of this, when I realized what I was really dealing with and how we've been so scared and taken away from this knowledge that is in this book, this ancient knowledge that precedes this book, right? I knew that I had to decipher it. I knew that I had to step away from all this so-called truth movement and patriot stuff and actually figure out this, you know, what's going on here. How do the way that I designed this, this book series, which is, I mean, I've probably got 5,000 pages at this point, is to literally give people a sort of dictionary, if you will, of terms that shows the difference between the legal law and the spiritual or moral or law of God or law of nature, however, whatever word suits your fancy, it's all the same. Doesn't matter what you call it, it's the same.
People attack the idea that, you know, the Bible contains the law because it has been used to justify so many horrendous things in our history. And yes, indeed, you even stated earlier you could find a justification for, well, nearly any ugly or immoral or ridiculous act in the Bible, depending on how it is you extract the information, right?
That goes back to another maxim that's very important that comes right from the Bible, but it's also a legal maxim. Mm. And I'll say it, but I don't know if I'll get it right. That no one can understand the whole by its parts. You can't understand the whole unless you read the whole over and over again. And therefore, you can't understand the parts unless you read the whole over and over again. Now, this applies to court cases, for instance. When someone will pass along a quote from a court case, and it'll be completely taken out of context because it has nothing to do with the actual case, just something that was used in the court case, has nothing to do with the opinion or the decision or the precedent, just something, hey, it was in this case, and here's what it says, and it sounds fascinating, so here it is. And it means absolutely nothing compared to the whole, right? So people go to the Bible and they take these little quotes out of there, and to them, it sounds like it justifies what they're doing because they haven't read the whole chapter that quote is taken from. They don't realize who's saying it because it says, well, God said this. Well, if God said that, then it must be true. Well, yeah, but look, what is the word God referring to? Oh, Archon. Oh, King. Oh, God. See, the God is whoever creates the law, again. So if God is saying something, then you better find out which God is saying it. Because the king purposely misled you to think that God is constantly out there as if God is some conscious thing that you know, sitting up there with plans to harm people and start wars and stuff. Nothing in the Bible talks about God doing anything, because God is nature. God is everything that exists, and you're either in harmony with that existence or you're not. And if you're in disharmony, for instance, if you go take a big shit in your water supply, well, guess what? You're probably going to get sick. That's the wrath of God. It's not because God did anything. It's because you didn't act in harmony with nature.
Well, see, that's true. And also, it is worthy of understanding who is being spoken to. When you're taking a look at a statement, okay, you mentioned a court case. Now, let me just throw a for instance at you and tell me if this doesn't help people maybe understand the logic here. Let's just say you're examining a court case that did set a precedent because of the outcome of that case. And during that case, you know, somebody who was sitting on the stand made a statement regarding, I don't know, let's just say prostitutes, right? And prostitutes are very worthy of whatever. Right? They make this statement. That has not, you know, you can extract that from that court case. It was memorialized. It was written down. But if you don't understand why that person is saying it, what question they were asked, what the situation was, it's not going to make sense, really. And then you can extract that statement to say, see, this court case supports, you know, the lifestyle of a prostitute, let's just say. Right? And that's not what happened. That's not even remotely the whole of the thing, is it? There's the other thing, is that when somebody says, you know, this person spoke to God, and now I want to know also who wrote it down, you know, this gets a little confusing at times.
Well, so there's what I call a litmus test, and this is the beauty of when you finally get over that hump of being confused. There really is no confusion in the Bible. There's only confusion caused from everything that's opposed to the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. There's a litmus test, and if God is, or Jehovah, I should say, to be accurate, which again, Jehovah is actually a longer version of a shorter, you know, the word itself is not meant to be worshipped, right? It's just a description, and it's meant to mean the supreme, unfathomable God, you know, total of existence that is oneness, that is nature, that is the natural design, if you will, that you're supposed to live in harmony with. And the natural law or the laws of nature are set up to there's the laws of nature and the law of nature. The laws of nature, of course, refer to the way nature actually works, right? Plant won't grow without water. And the law of nature is designed as the self-evident law of man.
Right. Now, right? here's where it gets odd, because, look, to say that one understands the nature of God is completely ridiculous, and I'll tell you why. Men have an understanding of time, okay, of linear action. You know, you do so much work towards something, therefore something happens, et cetera, et cetera. To my understanding, this entire idea is not something that the supreme being is necessarily constrained by. In other words, you know, if nature wants to destroy something in the blink of an eye, you know, this can be done. Nature can also create something in the blink of an eye without even the eye being able to behold it.
Right. This is the litmus test I was kind of referring to. You have to ask when you're reading anything in the Bible, or if you're reading anything at all, anytime whatsoever. If you're having a conversation about money, for instance, money doesn't exist in nature. You can never have a reasonable or real conversation about money because money does not exist. Yes, the paper or the metal, the coin, whatever. Yes, I get it. It exists, but it doesn't. That's the current form of that particular paper or money, which will disintegrate back into the earth, back into the nature it came from. Right.
Well, again, that like coin, you said. Yeah, again, like you said, because in the first hour, it's the representation of something as opposed to the something.
Right.
You know?
So the point is that you referred to the time domain. The time domain is something purely of man. We follow the Roman calendar, right? God or Jehovah is considered as timeless. It's considered as priceless, which means that money can have no possible place in reality, because in order for money to have any effect, you have to put a price on everything. That's what mammon is valuation. And the maxim of law, of course, says no man should ever put a valuation upon himself. And that means no titles, no fictions, no diploma, no nothing of any kind of financial value. So when you're talking about money, that makes you think of things not as their natural purpose or intent, but not as their source, but as what we call a resource. We're resourcing it into something of value because we're always chasing money instead of harmony with nature. We're always chasing something artificial, and yet we never realize that money is always debt. Whether it's other people's money, whether it's something you've acquired through a loan, or whether it's something in your bank account that you think you own, hey, that money's always property of government. It's never yours. It can be taken from you at any time, and it was taken in the confiscation in the 1930s. Everything that your person holds, that your status holds in this society, everything that is of government is property of government. That means that your status, your person, is property of government. Doesn't mean you are. You're volunteering to be a part of that. You're volunteering to be surety for that person, that vessel in commerce that you go around and you do all this stuff with in interstate commerce. And why is it, the question becomes, why is it that if I live in Utah or you live in New York, whatever, if I live in New York, how can what I'm doing in New York be interstate commerce? Well, because you're a national citizen, and every state, it's the word several, when we say it's several states, the word several means foreign, private, it means separate from each other, right? Well, the United States is a state in and of itself, and it is foreign or international. So everything you do as a foreign or federal citizen, public is what you're actually called, You're doing so in wherever you're residing. You're doing so interstate commerce because you're from another state. You're from this fictional district, in Washington D.C. That's where the person is birthed, right? All persons.
Well, see, so now here's the thing. Doesn't it seem as though value has been confused with purpose? Because look, for a hungry person who has not eaten, food is extremely valuable to them. You know, it is of great purpose to them, right? For someone who is ill, if there is medicine, and let's not get too deep into that topic, but if there is medicine to be had, this is of great value to them because its purpose is something that's required, right?
Valuation is mammon. It doesn't necessarily mean monetary valuation. So the Bible, the natural law says, take no and respect no persons or flattering titles. Well, guess what? You just used a flattering title. You just said that a homeless person or a poor person or any title that you put upon man is just an excuse. It's a way of saying, well, that I'm not going to act according to the natural law and give that man food. What does the law actually say? It says you shall have no wealth until all others are wealthy. It says be charitable at all times. It says love and even your enemies, right? So there's no reason that you should ever put a flattering title. Flattery is either good or bad. You know, it doesn't matter. It can go up or down. I'm king or I'm a subject, right? So any kind of title that you put on somebody is always false. This is why I say that the title of Christianity is a complete falsity, and it's also a fallacy. There are no Christians, and nobody's acting according to the law, right? So when I attach any kind of descriptive title to anybody, whether it's wealthy or poor, whether it's doctor or lawyer or anything at all, I'm taking that man and I'm considering him as something other than God, other than nature, other than what he really is, what he was destined and born to be, right? And that's the problem. We're not treating each other as if we're all one big family, one big, you know, they say the blood of Christ, which is a figurative way of saying that we're all one, right? We're all here in oneness, and we're all supposed to be taking care of each other. And you introduce this system that is basically based on sport or competition. We learn from competition, right? We learn the rules of every game, Monopoly, chess, and all these. We play sports, we do. And, you know, that's where we get our morals, right? Competition.
What the problem is there is this encouragement of dominion. This encouragement of domination over one another. This is really the root of everything, in my estimation.
In the Bible, it's the opposite. When the Bible says that man shall have dominion over the earth, that is a word that actually means you shall be the caretaker. So in truth, you can compare Christianity, I should say, the following of Christ as the following of the personification or anthropomorphization of the law. Mm-hmm. Because guess what? If you look it up, there's three words that mean the same exact thing. Word, Son, and Law all mean the same thing. The Word of God is the Son of God. The Son of God is the Law of God. The Law of God is the Word of God. The Son of God literally translates to the law or word of God. So what is Jesus Christ as an allegorical character that is supposed to be a representation of how to be God, how to be in godliness, basically, how to follow the law? Well, Son means law. Follow the Son, follow the law, right? These are the confusions. These are the purposeful mistranslations of the King. So that you're externalizing, you're actually, you know, a lot of people worship Christ as God. They call Christ the Creator. And I'm like, my God, have you not, I mean, these people have not read the frickin' Bible. Right? So,
right. Right. It gets even stranger because when we take a look at some other disciplines, let's call them, of religious sorts, and again, religion, I use that word advisedly because, you know what, if you tie your shoes every day, you do it religiously. So you know what? I eat religiously, Clint. I want to tell you, I do that when I can. So I see it that way. But
yeah, I drink coffee religiously every morning.
Exactly.
What we don't do is follow the law religiously.
There you go. That's what the problem is. But when I take a look at, uses of other phrases like namaste, right, the concept that, not only am I recognizing that you are God, but I'm recognizing that I am God, you know, in that particular school of thought, let's call it. This to me seems a lot more lawful than this concept of separation. We, us, them, we must dominate, we must control others, this kind of thing. Because if we're all the same, you know, your left hand doesn't fight with your right hand. Right? Your right foot doesn't fight with your left foot, generally speaking, because you're all part of the same body.
Yeah, but all of that notion of control, all of that notion of domination and war and pestilence and crusades, that does not come from the Bible in any way, shape, or form. You got to understand.
I'm saying that. No, I'm definitely saying that. I'm not saying that this is why I don't condemn the document, even though I will not, you know, conform to any of these religious concepts or schools of thought. I'm telling you now, I don't condemn the document because I recognize the legitimacy of it.
Right. So there's this back to this litmus test, right? The beautiful thing about once you finally get to the point where you're like, okay, so they call the Bible God's word. Mm-hmm. Remember, word means law. Okay, so another word, nature's law, right? So let's look at that and say, if God in the Bible is defined as all that is truth, and see, the problem with such things as the truth movement and, you know, all these, is we're constantly talking about lies, confirmed and ratified lies, fictions of law and everything else, and we're treating them as truth. And so we say the truth is that the court said this and therefore it's truth. Well, the maxims of law, you know, when you get into the lower, you know, or I guess, you know, depending on the unfoundational laws, once you get past the foundation of law out of nature and you get into the contract aspect, well, then anything goes. And the maxims of law are very clear at that point. So if I'm a judge and you're standing in front of me as a legal person, you're already my captive. I'm already administering everything you do. You have no rights before me whatsoever except what I give you. So right. You've already lost. You know, the second you go into court and you claim that you're a person of government, your property of government, and that's how you're appearing as an agency, well, you're screwed. You've already lost. You lost at birth.
Right, and all they're there to do is negotiate whatever particular part of the contract has been assigned to that hearing, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, so that's all there is to it.
So as a judge, I'm going to refer to the maxims of law. And I'm going to go, okay, here's my foundational. And I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to question you. I'm going to ask your name. I'm going to trick you into contracting and admitting that you're standing as surety for the person, right, the straw man. And I'm going to look. I know my maxims by heart. I have to because it's everything. It rules what I do as a judge. So I'm going to bypass every single part of the natural law because you're not acting in nature. You're acting in my fiction as my property. And I'm the administrator of that property. So the entire natural law, all your God-given rights, all your quote-unquote what people call constitutional rights, they go out the window. They have nothing to do. That's why you'll see over and over a judge will get frustrated and blurt out, the Constitution has no place in this court. Because you're not under the Constitution. You're not the people. You're a national citizen. You're not a citizen of any state, a private citizen. You're a goyim. You're literally a voluntary subject. I can just throw away the entire set of foundational real laws because they don't apply because we're strictly in fiction. Now, I've reached the point where, okay, now I'm in contract, and the maxim of law, first maxim of law I'm going to look at is that the contract makes the law. Mm. So I enter into contract, like I said, you contract dis-ease. You contract a legal disease, in this case, personhood. Sorry, you're a citizenship, a vessel of the United States, in interstate commerce, you're a foreigner in this courtroom, and I'm going to treat you as such under the federal law. So, now I have this set of maxims that are strictly built for the fiction, right? One of those maxims, and by far one of the most important ones, mm-hmm. It says this, and this is the same as the Jesuit, I'd have to pull it up. I don't remember if it's the oath or what, but it's, you know, the Pope is supposed to be infallible when it comes to his kingdom, right? So whatever the Pope says becomes the truth, even right. though you know it's not the truth. Well, whatever the court says becomes the truth, even though you know it's not the truth. And so what does the maxim of law says? It says anything that is adjudged, meaning The judge has given his opinion. It's become a public record. Anything that isn't judged can is the truth. Okay? If you know that it's a complete lie, it's all about fiction, it's still called the truth. Now, the truth isn't capitalized, but it's a legal version. And so if it's a legal word, then it's the opposite of truth, right? And so what does the maxim say? It says the truth is that black can be white, left can be right, up can be down. Okay, so in the legal realm, once you've broken the national or the natural law, God's law, you've become something, you've become someone else's property, you've entered into a legal contract, into the legal realm, into the matrix, basically, then you don't have any of that foundational law to protect you. You've abandoned God, and you've accepted a false God, which is the state, or the people, in our case. The people is a false God. It doesn't exist. No man is a people. It's a plural. Right. So we now enter into this realm where anything can be called or adjudged as truth. That means every single thing that is a lie can be called the truth. And indeed, you find that every legal term is a lie. It has to be, because it's always referring to something that isn't truth, isn't fiction, isn't alive, isn't part of nature. It's just words. That's it. It's always a lie. And we live in that lie. That's why it's so great to compare it to the Matrix, because everything in the Matrix is a lie. It's words. It's a code. They even show you the code in the movie. And that code is then taken through technology and put into a virtual reality that we all believe is real. And that is exactly what we're doing in the legal system. And therefore, nature is being destroyed before our very eyes. We are not following nature. We're not protecting. We're not being the protectorates of God, if you will. And therefore, our little fictional world, our computer world, our virtual reality, hey, it looks just fine. Yeah, we got all this commerce going on. We got profits and gains. We're expanding to no end and to no purpose. It's wonderful, wonderful. Meanwhile, everything's falling to shit. The bees are dying. Everything's dying. It's like you're plugged in and everything looks good in virtual reality while the world is falling apart around you. And trust me, the world, God is not going to go away. The earth is going to be here with or without man. It's just a question of whether we can get back into harmony with it and keep existing.
Well, look, sticking with the Matrix concept, though, there are – now here's an argument that I get into with people on occasion. There is a way out of the Matrix in general. But to me, when I examine the entire series, it looks to me like the escape into the Matrix is really just playing a part in that Matrix anyway. Is there a portal out? Because in the series, there is not, really. Even when, he goes to the Machine City and all of that, right, and he faces the architect and deals with that, and then they plug him in, and he goes in and takes care of the other virus, and man is a virus, and all of these things go on. It seems to me as though, you don't escape from the Matrix. You might maybe go to a different, time zone. You go into that area where you're on the Nebuchadnezzar, and it seems to be a rougher life and all of that, and it feels free for a bit. But the truth is, the architecture remains the same, the architect remains the same, and in fact, the story keeps repeating. What about that part of it?
Well, that's why I say those who made this movie – one of them now went from a man to a woman, by the way, the Wachowski brothers, right?
Right.
These guys are not good guys. They did not create this movie to enlighten you. They made this movie to make you even more attracted to things like transhumanism, to, again, if you read the other book I was talking about is, it's called Out of Control.
Right?
I mean, I can read
on Keanu's reading list, right?
Yeah. So Out of Control is a summary of what we know about self-sustaining systems, both living ones, such as a tropical wetland, or an artificial one, such as a computer simulation of our planet. The last chapter of the book, The Nine Laws of God, is a distillation of the nine common principles that all life systems share. As we make our machines and institutions more complex, we have to make them more biological in order to manage them. The most potent force in technology will be artificial evolution. We're already evolving software and drugs instead of engineering them. Organic life is the ultimate technology, and all technology will improve towards biology. Okay? You're getting the picture here of what they're trying. They're trying to steer you into the notion that you can do anything in the Matrix. You are a god in the Matrix. Okay, they're giving you the opposite of what Val Gillard was trying to tell you, which is, hey, stop worshiping images, stop worshiping idols, stop worshiping the simulation.
Right.
Get out of it. Go back to God. Go back to nature. For God's sake, go back and protect what sustains you. Because no matter how great you make the artificial intelligence, it can't sustain you. Eventually, you're going to have to become a freaking machine to live. And that's what this book is about. This is not a spiritual journey. The Matrix gets you thinking, but you think in this sort of punk rock sort of, hey, transhumanism is cool after all. And guess what? In the fiction, in the Matrix, I can do just about anything. I don't have to obey the laws of nature. I don't have to worry about nature. I'm virtual world. Who cares about what's happening in real life? Okay? That is not the message that I want to send to my children.
No, literally you're being led in the opposite direction.
And what was the solution? The solution, let me give you another example. Take Star Trek, right? Everybody thinks Star Trek is some freaking innocent, you know, oh, that's so sweet. Like, it's all about United Nations New World Order shit, right? It's all about the one religion, one law, one this. So, you look at Star Trek, look at the episode that was about the Borg. Did you ever see the Borg?
Well, I'm actually a fan of the Star Trek series. I've watched just about every incarnation of it, yeah.
I challenge you to go and see who the Borg are. Go to a legal dictionary, look up the word Borg, as in bourgeoisie, as in the common middle and lower class.
Right.
Who are the Borg? It's all about perspective. The people who are writing Star Trek episodes, they're not good people. They're people who want to destroy the middle, take down the population, obviously. They're portraying the common people, the people of the nations. They're right. Comparing us to that Borg, and they're making us, I mean, of course, you want to destroy the Borg. I mean, you have to destroy the Borg so that the Federation, the Galactic Federation, can move on, right? I mean, God, right. You're being brainwashed and you don't even know it because you are the freaking Borg.
Well, but what's weird about that is that the Borg all work from the hive mind.
Exactly.
We don't seem to be working from a hive mind at this point, though.
Oh, absolutely. What are you talking about? That's the beautiful thing about the beautiful thing is the concept of choice, right? And the way that it's described and the way I have understood it from reading so much about it is that if you don't have the choice, if you don't have choice to follow either the spiritual or the legal law, then you're spiritually dead. You are part of the hive mind. Well, guess what? The legal law is the remnants of the strict law of the Roman law. When we don't have a law in place, the legal books tell you this, there's no law in place, we go back to the Roman law. The Roman law is our law. Okay? That is the very foundation of the legal system, is the Roman law. When all else fails, go back to the Roman jurists, you know, and there. And if you go to the congressional website, you can actually see the busts of the Roman, of the popes and of the Roman gods, if you will, the magistrates, the lawmakers. Right. That's who's in Congress. You know, you don't have a bust of Jesus Christ. You don't have a bust of God. You don't have a bust of anybody. But you have Josephus, and you have all these Roman and other, you know, people who are lawmakers. You have Hammurabi. Those are the busts that are on the backside of Congress. This is the part that you never see. Because, right. You know, you see the fasci on the wall, right? Mm-hmm. The Roman sign of dominance. But what they never show you is the back wall where they come into the Congress. And there, if you look at the website, the busts of the gods are all up there. Those are the lawmakers. That's where a law comes from. It's all the Roman law. So we call that the strictimini juris, which is the strict law. Absolutely, you're part of the hive mind because you're in the strict law. No matter what you do on the side, when you are summoned to court, you go to court. When you are sent a bill, you pay your bill. When you do, everybody is on the hive mind. Are you kidding me? The bee, I live in the beehive state, for God's sake. Why is Utah called the beehive state? Because, just like the front cover of this book, Out of Control, which is about self-sustaining systems like a beehive, right? We are the beehive state. We are the ultimate, because of the religion here, the Mormon religion, we are the ultimate in the hive mind. Mm. This is the basis. That's why they get so many, FBI or CIA agents from here. It's why they're building this place up, because the mindset here is absolutely of the hive mind. And depending on where you go in America, it's either less, well, it's generally less than here, but, you gotta wake up and realize how defeated. And I think it's the first step to anything, man, is we have to realize we are utterly defeated. We're defeated in education, by education. We're entrained through entertainment, through all these different ways. We love everything that we should hate and hate everything that we should love. We are completely defeated.
Well, see, but that's why I thought it valuable to mention the idea that, you know, even though people adopt these, you know, these iconographies from the Matrix all the time, right? They miss the point that based on what's laid out there, there is no way out of it. Like, you're already in it. Even if you escape it, you're still in it, you know, and it's simply a reoccurring cycle.
Well, the truth is that you're never actually in it because it doesn't exist. It's not part of nature. It's not real. Like I said, it's a computer algorithm that's being pumped into your head, and you believe that it's real, but nothing about it is real. Right?
But even when Neo escapes it and, you know, comes out of it and he's not in the pod and those other guys, like I say, are on, you know, they're going to Zion, which, you know, interesting. They're going to Zion, right? They're supposed to be outside of it, but still.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you ever stop and think that maybe Zion, or the real world was also, could you compare Zion to maybe we out here who are in the Patriot and Truth movement, who just, we're unenfranchised to the point where we can never really be anything in society. And so maybe the architect created another world where we believe we're free, where we believe that we can be sovereign. And we just have to figure out all this. And we live like hermits instead of, you know, having a steak every night. We become what we believe we should be. And we, this other matrix, this other sort of system is built. Which you could call the alternative news or the truth movement or the Patriot movement, for people like us who just cannot be forced and integrated into that system because we know it's false. We know it's fake. So how do you know that they were actually free and that that wasn't just another algorithm.
Well, that's the thing. It could easily just be a steam valve. Okay, so you didn't accept this part of the programming. We're going to give you the alternative programming.
The alternative truth. But the, yeah. But neither one was ever truth. And that's why why I feel so out of place, because I don't belong in the truth movement, because they're not talking about any kind of truth, anything self-evident, anything of God. They're talking about the fiction. I don't belong in the fiction. Because I know, I understand that the litmus test for everything now is it truth? What is truth? The truth is anything that is real, not man-made. Well, everything in the fiction is fiction. I cannot put myself into the fiction. But, hey, there's this truth movement over here. Okay, let me, oh, well, Alex Jones is full of crap. How about this guy? Oh, no, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And eventually you find out that all the foundations of the truth movement are false. All the foundations of the patriot movement are false. You're never going to be a sovereign. Sovereignty doesn't exist. Only God is sovereign, and you're either under the sovereign of God or you're under the false sovereignty of a state, which is a corporation. Sovereignty only exists in corporations. The right. People, the queen, doesn't even own, he's not the queen. The queen is a title that belongs to the corporation of the crown corporation. There is no queen. Queen is a fiction. But right. the lady comes along and breathes life into it, but she doesn't own, or say the queen owns 1/6 of the entirety of Earth, and the Pope owns this much and this. But that's a corporation. You gotta understand, that's not a man. That's a title. That's a corporation. And the president, what is the president? There's no real president. It's an office. It's a title. The President Trump isn't it's a fiction, right? And we believe in it, and therefore it has power. Just like we believed in the Matrix, and the Matrix, because
Hang on, because you know what, to add to the confusion here, and I hate to do this, but to add to the confusion, most people that evoke the idea of God or natural law also have no clue what they're talking about. I mean, they really don't, because they're describing these systems which were laid out over time through these different corporations and these different corporate fictions. They became codified in one way or another, and they're not related directly to what people are believing they're related right. to. So
that's why it becomes a religion. Like we said earlier, you either follow the law religiously, which is a verb, or you join a religion, which is a noun, a name, an empty title.
Right.
Right? There's a big difference between those two things. I wear a cross around my neck, therefore I am this. No. First of all, that's a whole different thing. Anyway,
even if you go into a contemporaneous time period, Christ was not crucified on a cross bar all that. But anyway,
actually, cross means stake. So when Jesus says, "Pick up your cross and follow me," the actual word is storos, which means stake. And if you think about what a stake is, you know, every city has stakeholders. We all have a stake in the fiction. I have a house. I have this property. I have this. It's all registered under this name. He's saying, "Pick up your stake." And abandon it. Sell everything and give the money to the poor and follow me. Well, what he's saying is follow the natural law. Get rid of all the fiction. Get rid of all the titles. Get rid of everything. Follow the damn law. Follow me. Right? So it's all figurative, right? Of course, no man in the right mind is going to follow Christ up on a cross and crucify himself in the literal sense. Don't take it literally. And even in the Bible, it talks about, you know, really what that's talking about is hanging up a public notice or putting a public notice in the newspaper. You render back to Caesar what is Caesar's, you give back Caesar's property, which is your person, your status, and you do a public notice. It says, "I am no longer Clint Richardson," or, you know, whatever it is. And that's in the Bible. It's actually, if you read carefully, it talks about putting the writing, the paper upon the cross. Not, that is your person. It's a piece of paper. It's all the contracts and all the words and everything else that makes up this legal status. Right. So when you're talking about dying on the cross, you're taking it literally, but it's a figurative way of saying being reborn into nature, going back to your original state when you were born in nature without all the fictional titles, where you're literally going back to, if you will, God. Which means nature. And again, going back to the litmus test, the beautiful thing about this is that the only truth, the only time that I will ever accept anything as truth, because I now understand the law, and I understand that only God is truth, and what is God? God is all that is self-existent. So anytime anybody comes up and tells me, I have the truth, here is what, let's say, money is. Oh, there's lawful money and there's legal tender and this is real and this is the truth. I'm like, you're talking about something that doesn't exist. It's fiction. It is not the truth. Right. But you have a word, a legal term, legal meaning anti-God, anti-nature, anti-real, and you call it the truth because that's what you're trained to do. You're trained to believe in the matrix. You're trained to believe in the illusion, in the simulation, in the simulacrum, in the coffee without an original. You are entrained from your birth through public education, through public this, public that, public television, to make you public-minded. And really what you're supposed to be is private. You're supposed to be reserved and private and not be part of a public anything. You're not supposed to be part of any group. You're not supposed to be part of a church. The true meaning of the word church is actually a people. So that's why the Bible says that the church or anything of God is never that which is built by the hands of men.
Right.
So masonry, Freemasonry goes out the window at that point. But of course they ignore that part of the Bible.
Yeah, right? Well, why wouldn't they? You know what? Before we run completely out of time, I'd like to point people to where they can follow up, because certainly if you've listened to this entire conversation, I think that if you have examined any of these issues, I know that this is the first time that it's been presented on this show in exactly this way. And, you know, I thank you, Clint, for coming on. I have to call you Clint because I don't have another name for you.
Well, Clint is what's called my Christian name. That is a perfectly legitimate, natural thing to call me. It's when you invoke the surname, the law, I mean, the maxim of law, again, says an addition to a name proves or shows minority or inferiority. Right? So as soon as I attach a surname, which is, again, it makes you incorporate. It incorporates the fiction with the real, or the Christian name and the surname, the nickname or false name. Then that is when you're actually calling me. I mean, you're offending me. You're literally you don't trust me. You must consider me as a legal entity that you can sue because you have no trust in me. That's what that actually, this is why we have this legal system, because we don't trust each other. We have no actual trust. We have to create a corporation that's a trust or a contract, because we have no law, no natural or moral law between us. So we can't do business with each other because we don't trust each other. And we use something that can't be trusted, which is money. But, You gotta understand too. I know that it sounds like I probably sound very confident, or belligerent, or cocky, or whatever it is. But I gotta assure you that the beautiful thing about all this research that I've done is that I'm not giving you my opinion. I mean, it sounds like I'm giving you my opinion, but really I'm giving you the opinion of your adversary, the courts. I'm giving you what the Bible actually says. I'm giving you this stuff, and that's the way I start my book. It's like, hey, I'm not the subject. I'm the messenger. This book is full of knowledge that is not my own. None of this was ever my idea. This is not my opinion. I didn't come up with this stuff out of thin air. And that's what I really want to get across, is that I'm really not telling you this because it's my opinion or because I think it's right and therefore you should too. No, this is what the Bible says. This is the self-evident truth that is ultimately, when you ponder it, when you discover it, the beauty of it is that it's, you can't deny it. And the great thing is that the truth only hurts those who believe in lies, right? Mm-hmm. So the liar.
Look, I'm not offended in the least bit by a single thing you've said. I am simply trying to sort it out because, quite honestly, I've been programmed and trained for a long time to understand things in a different fashion.
Right.
I am in search of the better connection.
And that's why I wrote this book. Because really, you know, we have the story of the natural law, which is Christ, the example to follow the natural law. But what we don't have with that is a dictionary, right? We don't have the cipher to decipher the story. On the other hand, we have the dictionaries for the legal law, but nobody's ever written the story of the legal person. Nobody's ever written the story of the adversary to Christ, and that's what I attempted to do with this book. Anyway, it's strawmanstory.info, strawmanstory.info, and it's free. You can download the book. I'm printing it up for people who want a hard copy, because I know a lot of people don't like the you know, computerized things. It's 1,200 pages in the first volume. The next volume will probably be 1,000 pages. So, and it literally reads like a dictionary. So if you go through a dictionary, you know, you're going and you're starting at A, and then you go to B, and then you go to C, but you'll notice that a dictionary always says, hey, see this. You know, if you want more information on this word, see here, go here. You know, wait, you used a word that I don't know, so now I have to define that word. So I've taken the dictionary and the Bible, and I've put the words out so that as they're being used, you can actually define them on the spot. And most of the time, you find that the legal words are complete. They have nothing to do with what you actually think they mean, and that's the amazing. And same with the Bible, because again, we're taught a mongrel language. We're taught a literalist language, and you have to start thinking poetically in verse instead of in prose, and that's hard, but. Once you do, man, you really start to see exactly how you've been completely just enslaved by a lack of spiritual knowledge and law. And it's really, really, truly amazing. Again, everything I've ever done is free. All my documentaries are online, thecorporationnation.com. But this book is literally intended to be given freely and passed on. Strawmanstory.info, and then for the printed version, I'm giving it away free in exchange for donations, essentially.
Well, strawmanstory.info, and you can find out how to get a hold of that, you know, how to donate and all that to you at that website as well.
Yeah, it's all in there. I've got it. I'm updating it because I'm going to be finally turning the final thing in. You know, even though I'm never satisfied with the final thing, I'm self-editing. So pretty much going to turn it in about a couple, probably a week or two, and it'll take about a month to get the printing back. So. My first time ever doing anything like this, so I've made a couple of rookie mistakes and not understood the whole system, how it works, but. You know, I put it out there that I was going to do this, and I raised the funds, most of the funds. I'll probably have to borrow a little bit, but, which bothers me, but I raised most of the funds to get this printed. And it's my fault because I insisted that the book be the first volume be almost like a complete thing, even though the volume two will continue right where it left off. And that means it's 1,200 pages. So the cost went way up, and I'm like, ah, crap. So anyway, it's my life's work. That's all I can say. And I really want to understand, people to understand that I'm not giving you, my intent is just to pass on the knowledge of so many generations, so many mistakes, so many nations, so many, you know, ancient knowledge that, you know, you can't, I don't know how to explain it other than, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but this goes into extreme detail, so.
Well, and that's the great thing here, because look, the bottom line on a lot of this is that, you know, none of the great knowledge is any of ours who exist now. We are all rediscovering or discovering in some cases for the first time for ourselves and from our perspective, things that are already known. And, the reality is we're relating the knowledge of those who came before us in a lot of cases when we're trying to make these things more clear, wouldn't you say?
Well,
so?
I, and I think the big problem with that is that, again, we've been misdirected and we despise words. Like the words, you know, if I were to say the term, for instance, born again, what that means in the Bible is completely different in every way, shape, and form than what it is portrayed in the church. And the church turns people off because these quote-unquote Christians, who I think, you know, they speak in this sort of language that is, you can only attribute it to Christianity, right? It's a personality trait. It's kind of like eubonics or something. It's, you only find it with these crazy freaking people who have no idea what the Bible says, but they're just all gung-ho about Jesus, right? Now there's, oh God, there's language and hallelujah and all this stuff. And they're not, it's like satanic. They're not saying anything. They're not doing anything. They're not following anything in the Bible. They're just cheerleaders pretty much, right? And so the concept of being born again is just completely lost on people. It means something completely different. So that's an example.
There you go. And many examples to follow. Strawmanstory.info. That's where you go. Clint Richardson, sorry I had to use your surname.
was
my guest tonight, and I think this was an extremely enlightening conversation and definitely food for thought for me personally. I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, anytime, man. Thank you so much for having me.
So, anyway, the Ocelli Effect is done for the week. I'll see you guys again on Monday, and I hope that we have at least provoked some new thought. Ocelli.com is my website. Clint Richardson, go to strawmanstory.info. I guarantee you, if you begin reading, you will begin learning. Have a good night, everybody.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do. But obviously, they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prison with one particular racial group and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.